While electoral politics and self-inflicted health crises have understandably held public attention, a diverse coalition of interfaith activists in California took major steps to address the risk faced by prisoners and other vulnerable persons in the ongoing pandemic. With a first-person look, I'm very grateful to be joined by the Reverend Deborah Lee, Executive Director of Interfaith Movement for Human Integrity. Reverend Deborah, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much.
Tuesday, there were protests across California at prisons and immigration centers led by your group and others. Talk about what prompted that.
Yes, we have been for months now, since the outbreak of COVID-19 and since most of the rest of society has gone into shelter in place, especially here in California, we have been very concerned about the conditions inside jails, prisons, and detention centers in our state. We are well aware of the situation of overcrowding, extreme overcrowding, to the fact that courts have even ordered that they should be reducing the population size. And we knew it was just a matter of time before the virus would enter into those very overcrowded situations and be, you know, just like cruise ships and nursing homes, you know, we knew that this was also going to be a place that there would be many people who would be impacted and many people who would die. And that's already been the case. We started about 6 months ago really trying to draw attention to this situation because we know that for example, in the situation of immigration detention centers, immigration detention is completely unnecessary. It is a choice of the government. It's not required by the government to detain immigrants. They could be releasing people on alternative to detention programs, on their own recognizance, on some kind of bond, other kinds of ways. They don't need to be detained while their immigration cases are going through the court process. It's completely unnecessary. And also we realize that even in the prison population in California, there are many people who are, I think it's something like over 50% of the population have a pre-existing condition. There are a lot of elderly prisoners because of California's prison boom in the 1980s. There was a lot of locking people up and giving them 20, 30, 40, 50-year sentences. So there are a lot of older men and women in our prisons who we knew were extremely vulnerable and also who have served more than enough time. Many of them have changed their lives and, kind of also we feel being unnecessarily imprisoned, especially during this unprecedented global pandemic.
Yeah. What were the specific demands you're making?
Yes, well, our major specific demand, you know, the event we had on Tuesday was really focused on Governor Newsom, who in some regards has done well around, you know, as best as he can around the COVID pandemic, but has been remarkably silent in terms of our brothers and sisters who are incarcerated. So we've really been trying to ask him to do more in terms of his executive authority around this issue. And he is in charge or oversees the administration of all the state prisons, the 32 state prisons in the state. So our number one demand was really that they significantly reduce the population size, that the population sizes have got to go down. Public health experts at the University of California at Berkeley have said that for prisons really to be safe during a pandemic need to be at 50% population. They were at 130% of their, prescribed population. They've kind of come down to about 100%, but they're still way too many. So we're asking for more clemencies. There's a lot of things that are in his power to do. There's the clemencies that he could be doing. They've kind of stopped looking at ways they could look at more COVID releases, people who are vulnerable conditions. There were about 8,000 people that he looked at that said, that, oh, these are people who are at high risk, and very few of them have actually gotten out. So very frustrated about that process. Family members are terrified. There have been major outbreaks in about five of the prisons. San Quentin, people may have heard about. There's been over 2,000 cases of COVID, including and a significant number of deaths. There's been over 90 deaths in California of people who were encaged while they had COVID-19. That's mm-hmm. in our prisons, our jails, and our detention centers. So the first thing, going back to your question, was more releases. The second thing was to halt the expansion of immigration detention facilities. It's hard to believe, but during this COVID time, the private prison companies and federal immigration, customs and enforcement are trying to expand three detention facilities in California. And that is kind of an anathema to think about putting more people into these confined spaces during this time. So we're asking him to stop that, to not allow them to do that, that this kind of goes against public health advice. The third thing was to stop transfers and that includes transfers between prisons, because that was how the spread of COVID has happened in our California state prisons. People being transferred from one prison to another prison has actually been the expansion of the virus. And then also what we're seeing happen, which is really concerning to us, is that the governor and the California prisons are allowing Immigration, Customs and Enforcement, ICE, to take people who are being released from prison. Like, they could be being released from prison because they served their time. They have paroled out. They've been deemed safe to release, to come back to their families and to reenter society. And they're allowing ICE to intercept them before they actually are able to meet their families in the parking lot. So that is a practice that we absolutely believe is counter to our faith values, because mm-hmm. we believe in second, third, fourth, fifth chances. We believe in forgiveness. We believe in redemption. We believe that people have served their time. They shouldn't be being punished doubly or triply again. And to allow them, they've upheld their contract to like serve their time and rehabilitate, and then we're sending them back into immigration prisons for deportation.
Have you been able to gauge if there was any immediate impact from that banner drop day of action?
The banner drop day of action, I think it's too soon to tell. This banner drop action, I want to say, has been just the next thing in a series of actions that we've done. There were people who were arrested who had, it wasn't the faith community, but more some of the younger activists and lawyers had chained themselves to the governor's mansion. With the same list of demands, about 12 of them did that a few months ago. The faith community has sent a letter signed by 600 faith leaders across the state of California urging the governor to stop the transfers and to increase clemencies and reduce the prison population in the face of the pandemic. We have met with his office staff. So there's a lot of things that have been done, and the banner drop action was just like one more way to really show that there are communities and families across the whole state who are affected by this and who are really terrified for the well-being of their loved ones. We just want to see some kind of movement. I mean, it could be the sick, it could be the elderly, it could be the blind, it could be the disabled, it could be the transgender, it could be so many of the vulnerable populations who are imprisoned right now. And we're just not seeing an act of compassion and an act of clemency on his part.
What's blocking the releases that your coalition is advocating? Because I know that there have been some releases in California of the prisoners. What's stopping it now?
There have been some, but I think there have been very few. There have been talk of more, but when we actually look at the reality, the people who have been released were by and large natural releases. There were people whose time was up. They were going to be coming up for release anyway, and there are cases where people whose time was up, they finished their time, and then they got transferred to ICE. So what is blocking this is I feel there's still a lot of politics of fear at play, and that's what's disappointing. It's disappointing that people are still, and I think the governor to some degree himself, is still using this fear of the stigmatization of people who have spent time in prison or who are in immigration detention, the stigma of like, oh, you know, can they be released and where are they going to go? I mean, he even said, you know, where are they going to go? And it's, and I, you know, what we've been trying to express standing in that side by side with families at that banner drop, there were families in those locations who are pleading for their loved ones saying, you know, we are here. We want to take care of our loved ones. We don't think that the prison can take care of them with COVID-19. We have a place for them. So that's my guess is what's going on. Is this politics of fear of if they release someone and God forbid somebody does something in the future, it's going to come back to him, right? I think we have to have a different understanding of why does crime exist? You know, what are the conditions that lead to crime? There's been so much disinvestment in Black and brown communities in California that have been completely abandoned for decades in terms of decent jobs, in terms of decent schooling, in terms of health care, in terms of parks, in terms of programs for young people. I mean, there's communities not far from where I live that have been abandoned since World War II, you know, effectively, you know, by in terms of government investment. But actually, crime has been going down. And that's the reality, is that crime has been going down. And so we feel like we want to continue to move with this in this direction and that everybody in prison, should not be having a death sentence. And that's kind of the situation right now.
How many people would be eligible for release?
I think if our demands were met, I don't know the exact number, but I think we're talking about tens of thousands of people, maybe 40,000 people, 50,000 people could be released. There's so many good people who could contribute to their families, could contribute to their communities. And we really think that this is a moment that these things that people need to be looked at as, as humans and with some compassion. So that's what we're hoping. You know, we're trying to push California to decarcerate. We were the start of the prison boom that went crazy across the country in the 80s. And we want to see that happen because we want to see the investment of money in our state go to so many of the needs that our community has in terms of housing, affordable housing, and community programs and senior programs. Like, there's so many needs we have in the communities that we would really like to see this money divested from more incarceration and really put into long-term sustainability for our communities.
Our listeners will be asking, why is this the priority for your faith-based activism? And I'd like you to address that. And then tell us, how can listeners find out more about Interfaith Movement for Human Integrity and follow your work?
Thank you for that question. The Interfaith Movement for Human Integrity is, believes that every person is sacred. And we have found that that is a common denominator of our different faith traditions, and that we have really felt it is important to bring people of faith together to work on social movements, to be engaged in social movements where that is not evident, where the sacredness of every person isn't being practiced, where there are huge stigmas that somehow cast others, you know, people as other, people as unworthy, people as, oh, they're not part of society, or they can never be. So we really felt that it was our faith calling to focus on people whose humanity has been most denied, and that was a specific calling for the faith community. You know, there's others that might be easier to, other projects that might be easier to do, or other movements that might be easier. But we felt like, you know, as the faith community, this is something unique that is one of our values, to really lift up the humanity. So we've really looked at, like, where are there the greatest stigmas? And we've looked, and so that's brought us to look at undocumented immigrants,
sure,
where there's a huge amount of stigma. And then people who are imprisoned and in jails, where, yeah, there's another kind of huge stigma. And we felt like that was so important for us to be able to say, if we can shine a light that they too are human, they too are part of us, that we actually are co-responsible in many cases for the situations that have led to, like, these systems, have led to people being forced to migrate. That's part of our shared societal responsibility, that that was a really important role for the faith community to be standing in that space and to be standing with those families and those communities. So please join us on our website, which is www.im4humanintegrity. I'm for humanintegrity.org.
Reverend Deborah Lee is Executive Director of Interfaith Movement for Human Integrity in Oakland, California, working under the credo, I love this, all people are sacred across bars and borders. Reverend Deborah, thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much.